A wild Steve appears.
A wild Steve.
Throw a Pokeball at his face and see whether or not he decides to get captured or just gargle it and then spit it back out.
He used Splash.
He used Splash. That's a very apt response to that joke. Nicely done, sir. He uses Splash. Welcome to the Save vs. Poison podcast, the podcast dedicated to gaming, general geekery, and enduring sobriety in an ever-maddening society, with your host Will and two guys that probably live under his stairs. If you're an addict, know an addict, or are just interested in exploring the outer mysteries of geekery, you're in the right place. Without further ado, let's get to the show. Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's an exciting evening for this post-July 4th show. We gave all the hosts the night off on July 4th so that they can watch a whole bunch of things go explode, explode, explode in the sky. I'm pretty sure Steve probably did and may have joined in, at least according to the joke I wrote, he did. And then Tiki will not be joining us tonight.
He exploded.
He was like, you know what? It's time to Wile E. Coyote.
He held on to that firework a little too long.
Just a little too long. But he did it for science, and we're proud of him. We're proud of him. joining me tonight, this last 4th of July, that was yesterday, he was accused of strapping bottle rockets to himself in an effort to teach his children about responsible firework usage. It worked, and now his kids call him Mr. Crispy Wrists. He's my friend Steve. Hey, Steve.
So was I attempting an Iron Man-esque, cosplay? Is that what's happening?
That was my original. That was what the original joke was going to be. On July 4th, he attempted a Iron Man Tony Stark.
And now he has three less fingers.
Now he his children call him Mr. I just like the idea of you being called Mr. Crispy Wrists. Like we could put just like a 12 bucket of your wrist shirt together, sell it with some biscuits and gravy, and dominate fast food across America. Also joining me tonight, for the very first time, one of our longtime listeners and a friend of the show, in an effort to get door-to-door salesmen to stop soliciting, he puts a sock on his front doorknob because everybody knows what that symbol's for. In an ironic turn, he now sells doorknob socks, door to door. He's our guest host, Bo. Hey, Bo.
Hello, everybody.
I'm really proud of that joke. I came up with that one last minute. I was happy with that one.
Well, the life of a solicitor is a lonely one.
The life of a solicitor is a lonely one. You are absolutely right. Maybe it just gives them joy to see that sock on your doorknob.
I feel like it's a good way to get athlete's foot on your hand.
Grandma comes over and goes, I got fungus on my fingers.
So itchy. My palms are itchy.
Bo, how's it going tonight, man? How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So one of the things that I really want to do moving forward is start incorporating stories from the community. And tonight is going to be not the first interview that we've done. Obviously, we did season one, episode 24B was with my neighbor Joe. And that was really one of my favorite episodes. And then just a couple weeks ago, we had Mike Gallagher on to talk about his book and the connections between different chronic stigmatized illnesses. And I thought that was a really good episode, even though it was take two, and those are never never quite as fucking I'm still angry at myself for that. An hour and 45 minutes of fucking gold for that, and I just completely forgot to download the stupid thing. So, yeah, that was really frustrating. That was frustrating as hell. Steve, how the heck are you tonight, sir?
I am tired.
Oh, he's a sleepy boy. Why are you such a sleepy boy?
Well, because I normally get up very, very early for my job, but last night I pushed the limits a little bit because...
Your wrist hurt?
Because my wrist hurts. And now my wrist hurts. I pushed the limits, not because my wrist hurts, but now my wrist hurts.
That's funny.
But yeah, you know, I wanted to hang out with the kiddo and watch some fireworks and stuff, so...
Were you up till till super late, or
not super late. I mean, super late for me, which is like at this point
8:15,
9:30. Yeah, this is ridiculous. But yeah,
I wish they would have shut up at 9:30.
That would be amazing, wouldn't it?
My neighborhood sounded like Beirut until about midnight.
Yeah,
yeah.
I couldn't go to sleep because the concussion waves were pinging off of our windows.
Wow,
I'm not, and like whoever are my neighbors, they're maniacs.
Wow, that is surprising.
Just trying to burn the shit down.
Did you? You didn't end up.
It wasn't just one neighbor. This was in all directions, 360 degrees. Like, these windows were rattling. Those windows were rattling. Like, Jesus Christ, should I dig a fighting position? What's going to happen?
Seriously, like, you put on a helmet and some old ODs, and you're like, they're in the trees. They're in the tree. They're the only, you know, the trees are only 7 feet tall, but they're in them.
Just, I knew they'd run out of money soon enough, but I was like, damn.
They save up for months to be able to afford that bang, bang, boom. Didn't head over to Fireball's place?
No, I had some things I was taking care of around the house.
Gotcha.
So I'm still doing some isolating and not really venturing out too far these days.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
No, I can totally respect that, man. Totally understand. Totally. I mean, I do it because I don't want to leave my beautiful, comfy house. I don't have like a health reason. Mine is completely social and laziness. I went to the gym. Yeah, I saw five humans. That's enough for me. Anything beyond that, and I'm just like, nope, nope, nope. Thank you. I don't want to. Even Steve, I'm like, I don't want to see your mug. Let's just play something online.
It's just a lot of work.
Let's record a podcast or something. We could do that instead. Wouldn't that be so much more fun? No, it wouldn't be so much more fun. Speaking of things that are just incredibly fun, my name is Will, and I'm an alcoholic.
My name is Bo, and I'm also an alcoholic, and I'm in recovery for PTSD as well.
Cheers. Steve?
My name's Steve. I'm not an alcoholic, but I was very recently tricked into eating vegan Froyo.
Oh, God. What? Wait, what?
Tricked is a strong word.
And like,
when I say
did tricked, they switch I it mean, at like the last second a la Vincini?
No. It's more like I was too stupid to read the entire description of said Froyo and ordered the vegan one because I'm dumb. Because all I read was blueberry pancake, and I was like, fuck yeah, that sounds delicious. And then later, as I was sitting there eating, I was like perusing said menu, and I was like, God damn it, it's vegan.
You're like, I was wondering why this tasted like a slightly wet fart.
Well, here's the thing, though. So my wife asked me, she's like, she goes, well, couldn't you tell the difference? I was like, I don't eat frozen yogurt nearly enough to like be like, this is frozen yogurt for sure. Or to be like, there's something off about this.
It just tastes like ice cream that somebody has been crying over.
I just really wanted ice cream, so it all tasted a little off.
Yeah. Froyo is just ice cream's lie. It's just a lie. It's like saying sweet potato fries. Like, I know what you're trying to do. I know. You're trying to make crack healthy. Stop trying to make crack healthy, all right? There's no such thing as diet crack. Just give me the regular crack. I'll be happy.
What was it that The Good Place said? It's leave it to humans to take something and make it slightly worse.
Slightly worse, yeah. I remember the last time I went to a Froyo place. We all went to the Froyo place. Everybody got something, and then I was like, all right, so I brought you to the Froyo place. To apologize for bringing you the Froyo place, I will pay for the Froyo.
So my son is obsessed with it. That's the, like, and he's obsessed with it because it's the place near us is the one where you get to put all the toppings on, and he loves that.
Sure.
Because, you know, everything ends up on this particular cup of frozen.
Because it's just candy with a light like exactly. Spackling of Froyo underneath it. Yeah, no, I get it.
But I don't eat it very often.
It's like frozen yogurt took the Mongolian barbecue model and said, how can we make this sad? How can we make this really, really sad?
And I was like, how can I make it even more sad?
By
no offense if you're a vegan out there. I'm very proud of you. You're better than me.
As long as you don't tell me about it, I'm proud of you. Okay. That's like the only part of it that I'm proud of you.
I just don't like being tricked into eating it. Again, like, less tricked, more my own fault.
It's like one of my favorite stories about Michael Gallagher was, one, I didn't know that he was Harvard trained. Two, I didn't know that he was vegetarian. I didn't learn those things for a really long time. Do you know how that makes him a fucking unicorn in my world? All right. I want to chop off that horn and mount it on my wall.
I mean, I don't think he'd like that.
No, he wouldn't like that. Leave Gallagher's horn alone.
Probably rather attached to his horn.
Leave Gallagher's horn alone. You're right. My bad.
You know, there's a lot of horn talk here.
There's a lot of horn talk. You can have too much horn talk. You're absolutely right, Bo.
Something horny?
Yeah, yeah. So I think it's a Letterkenny reference. Am I on there?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
You are.
Yeah. Have you watched Shoresy?
Yeah, I plowed through that in one sitting.
Oh my God, it's so good. It's so good. It hit like every single one of like my emotional, like my sports emotional needs. It hit all of that.
When he's crying during the anthem, just
yep. When he's crying during the anthem, when he sees the Captain C on the sweater and he grabs Sanguinet's arm and he's crying. Oh my God, yes. I was like, this is so good. And then like all of the chirping and the inappropriate humor. Fuck me, that was good.
Yeah, it was.
God, that was a good show. I can't wait for season 2.
A lot of heart too.
Oh, tons.
A lot of heart in it.
Tons of it. It was like watching like an adult version of Mighty Ducks.
Yes.
And that just tickles every one of my fancies. And especially since the Avs won the cup, like I'm having just a very hockey centric time of my life. I want to go play again.
I remember hearing the stories of Fireball and Muppet in the riots during the first when they won the first
cup. Yeah.
Fireball said they took a bus down so they could get in the riots.
Oh my God.
And they you got to talk to him about it. He said they were high five drinking beers, and it was like, yeah, see that's that kind of behavior right there, gentlemen. That's what's going to happen.
Yep. That's funny. That's friggin' funny. So, back to that wasn't I fuck, that was a good psyop. Because I joined in on it and I wanted to
so
engage with it.
He went in a total different route too.
He got you, dude. Bo, he got you, man.
Yeah,
he got you. It happened.
Hey, listen, I say a lot of crazy shit.
We look forward to it. We do. So, back to the sobriety check-in. I don't have anything pressing as far as cravings go. I do have a story that we're going to save for next week. And just a little heads up to anybody listening. The next week's topic of conversation is going to be about what you do when your private space, your like your home, you know, home base, when a source of temptation, of consistent temptation, is in that space, and some of the things that you can do about it. I don't want to go into too much with it, but this will be just a topic. Next week's will be a topic that I think will be a little bit more practical than just kind of the sort of more broad strokes of stuff that we talk about on the regular here on the show. But, it was good. It was a good week in Soberville. For the most part, we did go to the Avs parade downtown last week for the Stanley Cup. So I got to take some really great photographs of the Stanley Cup. That was a lot of fun. The kids were there, and while they were squirrely for the most part, they were excited to see the cup. We were down there for about 5 hours, and it's downtown Denver, which you know is a pretty liberal city. And it was a lot of people drinking and a lot of people smoking weed. And I'm not a huge, like, I'm just not a big weed guy. We've talked about that a bunch of times on the show where, you know, because of how weed interacts with the brain and the fact that I don't like trying to chase rabbits in terms of, like, chase thought rabbits. I don't like doing that. I don't like it when the thought rabbit gets out of my grasp and goes down the path a little ways, and I'm trying to catch up to it so I can finish a fucking thought. Not a big fan of that. But I did notice that, like, the part of me that gets judgy seeing other people, you know, indulging in whatever substance they enjoy. And I have no reason to believe that, you know, they're alcoholics or they're addicts or anything like that. They're just, you know, cutting loose in a normal environment to, you know, in a party environment. And that's okay. That's all right. You know, please be safe. Please be respectful. Please don't leave your fucking beer cans on the grass outside of the Capitol building, you fucking heathens. But if you, like, if you're there and you're just having a good time and you're minding your, you know, P's and Q's and enjoying a beverage, that's fine. But I did find myself getting, you know, kind of a little bit judgy, a little bit frustrated. And I don't know if that's just projection because I wish I could be that kind of person still. Like, there was a time where if it had been, like, me and Tiki and Russ and, you know, any other Fireball, anybody else down there for that day, we all would have, you know, set up picnic and you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner would have been beer followed by whiskey followed by more beer. And I'd be lying if I said I didn't miss that just a little bit. So, but, you know, had my kids with me. My wife came down. We had a good day of wholesome family hockey fun watching the drunk as fucking monkey players up on stage, like, goofing around through their speeches. Like, Jared Bednar broke down, like, 3 or 4 times with the, "I just love this city so much, man." Like, us, "Oh, Jared, I get it, buddy. You drank too much champagne out of the cup last night, didn't you?" "Yeah, you did. I get where you're at. No worries, bro. No worries. I'm here."
Weren't we trying to run him out on a rail, like, 2 years ago?
At least some people were. I think some people were, but I think that Joe Sakic wanted to really give him a shot. Like, the first year that he got here, the team had, what, 48 points? That was the worst record in years.
Yeah. No, I'm glad he got it. I mean, he's nailed all three levels, so.
Yep. Yep. So, but yeah, that's my sobriety check-in. Bo, anything to check in with?
Yes, actually. Sobriety, you know, not drinking, has been pretty easy. Don't think about it at all. As far as my recovery, I had a moment where I had to use some of my, I'll use this word, dialectic behavioral therapy, mm-hmm. and I was able to take a situation that I thought was a completely different situation than what was actually happening. So instead of anyone being hit with a taco, I was able to navigate this. Listen, someone got hit with a taco recently. So I'm just saying, I'm in recovery. There are good days, there are bad days.
Right,
so
right.
This was a great day the other day. I nailed it. So that was something that came up in my chats with the therapist. I've been in therapy about almost as long as I've been sober.
Uh-huh.
So, in fact, getting sober was one of the best and worst things I've ever done. So
sure.
But the other day really, really nailed that, and that's a good win.
That's cool, man. You nailed it, and nobody got lettuce or cheese in their hair. I like that.
I mean. Yeah. You don't want to get hit with flying Mexican food.
Yeah, that is. I mean, it's not the only food that I don't want to get hit by. Like, if you're gonna throw a food product at me, I'd like sushi, please, because then I might be able to, like,
salsas and, like, right in the eye.
I know, that lime juice and cilantro in the nostril. God.
To be fair, I do have a behavioral disorder.
Right.
So, acting out is something that, unfortunately. Has happened in the past.
Sure.
And obviously the drinking helps fuel a lot of that. So But I guess we'll get to that.
Yeah. We're going to get to that in the next section. But so just to go through it, you had an instance where ordinarily you would have acted one way, but because you had an appropriate tool to mitigate that, you were able to move past that moment and keep in a calm state of being. Yeah.
Yes.
Awesome. I mean, so much of what we do when we're mitigating cravings is all to do with those moments and having that one right tool that works for you. So the fact that you were able to navigate that well, that's awesome, man. I'm super proud of you. Thanks for the share, man.
No, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Steve, you got anything to share tonight?
Oh, sure. Yesterday, so just part of our family fun, we have just a little backyard inflatable pool.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, I do. And so I tried to get it going early in the morning to, you know, just let it warm up because, you know, obviously hose water is cold as fuck.
Yeah.
And you know, just trying to do a nice thing for the family and encountered that the pool had a couple different leaks in it and went through several different versions of trying to fix those, patch those, couldn't find the patch, got it in the store, and just started getting like super agitated with the whole situation, but also stuck in that like, I'm going to do this. This is like, we're gonna have fun.
No, you told God you were gonna put that up and you weren't about to lie to God.
Exactly. So yeah, that was an interesting little moment. I snapped at the wife. I had to apologize to her a little later. Yeah.
Over a pool.
She's like, well, we could just go to, we have near us, we have this little mini water park called the Bay near-ish us anyways. And she's like, well, we could just do that. And I was like, you could do that if you want. It's like, I'm putting up this pool.
I love the idea of you sitting in that pool as they've gone off to have a great time at the Bay. And you're just angry sitting in there cross-legged. Just like fuming, and then they get back, and then you're like, "Hey, I did it!" And they're like, "Fuck yourself, Steve. Just serious. We went on water slides while you were
fortunately, I did get it patched, and we were able to enjoy it, and that was good. Everything worked out, and I calmed down. But it's definitely just one of those, you know, moments, those parenting moments where you just get so sucked into. Like, in fact, I mean, I told you the story. Me and you had talked on yesterday, and you had invited us to your pool. And it was a little bit like, no, I'm doing this pool, Will. This is going to happen.
I wasn't actually going to let you into the pool, Steve. I mean, like, if you'd shown up, I'd have been like, why did you quit on your own pool, Steve? Yeah, exactly. What's wrong with you? Don't you have any gumption?
Under different circumstances, it would have been, you know, an offer that, yeah, okay, yeah. You know what? This isn't working out. Sure. No, I was too far in.
Yeah.
This was going to happen. This pool was working one way or the other because I already got fucking super glue in my beard. Like, no, this pool will work out.
I love the idea that you now have like some of your beard glued up to like your right cheekbone.
Well, no, I've since like, I don't know. I mean, cause I've, you know, been picking at, I've either pulled out said hair or like the glue itself came out. I don't know, but like,
you got a bald spot.
It was pretty fucking ridiculous.
That is funny. That's good stuff.
So yeah, so there's my little mental anguish.
But you apologize to your wife.
I recognized my behavior after I got it fixed and kind of calmed down. I was like, I am sorry. Like, I should not have snapped at you. I just was. It was hot. It was so hot. I'm sitting in the sun trying to glue this damn thing. Like, the glue that I initially had wasn't setting very fast. I mean, it was just staying soft, and it wouldn't, like, the air was pushing it off, and it wouldn't, like, the patch wouldn't set. And then I tried another thing that I had. Oh, God, I just
Okay, okay. I just want to go. So I want to go through this. I want to go through this. Okay. All right. So Will gets a craving to drink, uses one of his tools, passes by, everything's okay. Bo has a behavioral issue, uses one of his tools, passes him by, everything's okay. Steve can't put up a pool and snaps at his wife. I just want to encapsulate all of this right now. Great job.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I had no tools. Given honestly. I probably would have been fine if it wasn't so fucking hot outside. Of course, if it wasn't so hot outside, I wouldn't be trying to put up a pool.
That's true. That's true. Well, thank you so very much for the share, Steve. I'm glad that you apologized to your wife.
Yes.
And that you have the emotional intelligence to know that you done did wrong.
100%, yes.
So tonight's show, the reason that Bo is on is... he has done something that so few members of our audience have done. And if you are a member of our audience, one of our favorite things is when we get some feedback or questions or like one of Steve's favorite bits on the show was literally the corrections show where we go through like the top five things that people told us were wrong. And then we like addressed each one on the show. It was one of Steve's favorite things.
Yeah, that was great.
If you have the inclination, please reach out to us. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're on Twitch. We're on YouTube. We're all over. Yes, we're actually on YouTube this episode right now. Here, I will probably be doing something funny on camera or stupid on camera, funny and stupid on camera to let you guys know that, yes, the YouTube editing, the podcast, all coming together. Oh, we're on so many different things. But Bo asked me a question. And now this was a question that I thought needed a little bit more, one, time and energy. And now it's been probably about a month and a week or so. It's been like 4 or 5 weeks since the original question was asked. And I'm really sorry about having this take that long to get any kind of resolution on this. But I thought it was such an important question, I didn't want to answer it flippantly, and I wanted to have more of a conversation about it than to give a prescriptive, because I don't think that I have necessarily all of the wisdom needed to be able to take a look at this from anything but my perspective. So, Bo, why don't you ask your question, and then we'll get into having a conversation about it, because I think this is a good one.
Well, the question, I can't remember exactly what I asked, but it was specifically about the nature of addiction. Why some people get addicted and some people don't. I was talking to you about in my recovery, I don't really have cravings for alcohol. I'm not really tempted by it. Because once I kind of went through this journey in my therapy and I saw it for what it was, my perspective on the whole addiction issue sort of really changed. And even in the month between me asking you that question and today, a lot of perspective is, you know, solidified on my, you know, my view of what's going on. And part of my therapy is coming from a trauma-based care, I guess is what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what I was asking was about, you know, how addiction looks and works and operates. And from my end, from my angle, all addiction stems from trauma, and it's starting for me, at least, to appear. It's a maladaptive coping mechanism, is what I was told.
Mm-hmm.
So, we're trying to soothe the pain, and that's really where the issue is, and so. I really, for me, I felt like I was sitting at a table and looking at a bottle, and I was looking at that bottle and staring at it and saying, don't drink that, you know, don't remember all the fun times. They weren't fun. Just like staring at this bottle, looking at it like this was the monster that was ruining my life. And really, the monster was standing behind me. And once I had the kind of, I guess, the courage to stand up and turn around and face the reason why I picked up the bottle, putting it down really was not even part of my fight anymore. As I guess as soon as I turned around to face what set me off and down this road, it didn't really seem like it was what was, I guess, controlling me or haunting me anymore. For example, there's liquor in my house right now. My wife still drinks on occasion. There's plenty of booze in the house, and there are no marks on the bottle or anything like that. My wife has no concern about me having any sort of you know, falling off the wagon or anything like that.
Okay.
So it's been really just a paradigm shift. Like, things just totally changed once I saw alcohol was how I was salving my wounds. And it seems, you know, I'm looking around at a lot of people who are hurting, and you know, they're using alcohol and drugs to really make them, you know, to help with those wounds. And that seems to be where, you know, the focus of the efforts need to lie, instead of, you know, finding this bottle and making sure it doesn't ruin my life. I'm like, I'm ruining my life several different ways. This bottle's just how I'm holding everything together.
Okay. So the question that I kind of paraphrased earlier and then asked was basically, you had suffered trauma, and
yes,
you are currently in being treated for that trauma, and that's awesome. I'm really, really very pleased to hear that. And you were using, for the longest time, you were using alcohol as a system of self-medicating for that trauma. And once you found yourself in a place where you were getting the mental health care that you needed, the alcohol fell by the wayside. And you asked, so at least this is what I'm, you know, I'm remembering as the question was, you know, can somebody who was self-medicating, who was abusing that self-medication, is, where does the term addict fit into this, into this dynamic? Because the way that it seemed that you were talking about it was, you know, I have all of these deep-seated problems. I was using alcohol to mitigate those deep-seated problems. I'm now using appropriate tools. I'm not drinking at the same time as I'm using those tools. All of my thought and need for the alcohol has fallen by the wayside. Am I an addict? That was kind of what it felt like when you asked that question.
Yeah, I yes, that's like, what, where is that? I guess that what was I addicted to? Was I addicted to the alcohol, or was I addicted to not feeling like I was going to die, or you know, any number of other problems?
Sure.
So, and can you really be addicted to not feeling bad? Obviously, it's a like I said, it's a maladaptive behavior.
Right.
It's something that I shouldn't be doing, but I am doing, but it's making me feel, I don't know. It's really crazy when I like sit down and try and parse through it, because I've known several people who also have various addictions. Alcohol. My son has a problem with opioids, and it's and it just for me, every time I look at the problem, I'm like, it's why they picked up the bottle. It's why they started taking the drugs. That's the issue. I mean, so obviously with opioids and thing like that, there's physical addictions, and with alcohol too.
Yeah.
Because it's such a blast of GABA and everything else. But once you're clean, I mean, I still crave soothing myself, but now I'm using things that aren't. Yeah, I'm still addicted to not feeling bad. Right?
Sure.
So, I don't really know where I was. I still don't know where I'm. What question I'm trying to wrestle with?
Gotcha.
Because I have a lot of other questions, but I was really just curious. Like, people with alcohol problems don't get better around the alcohol. They just get better, right? But if you a lot of the books I'm reading out there, after about 2 years of sobriety, there's really, you know, the advice is just don't keep not drinking. Like long-term sobriety usually turns into some sort of inward lens and figuring out, I mean, at least that's where I've seen a lot of other people that I've known with these issues go.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I don't know even if any of that makes sense, but I'm just confused as to why this isn't dominating my life anymore, because it was always there, always present. Like I was saying earlier, you know, it's party time. Let's get on the bus and go.
Yeah.
And now, you know, like I was worried about, like Tiki said, I'm not going to be fun anymore.
Sure.
I'm still plenty of fun. I mean, I'm in a band. I hang out in bars with people who are drinking. I make money from drunks occasionally. So I'm like, I'm not morally opposed to this. It was a big part of my life, and it kind of still is. So I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with this. And you just keep letting me ramble. So
well, I don't want to cut you off midstream. If you've got something insightful that you want to share or to ask, then certainly I don't want to get in the way of that. So when you asked me the question, I had a couple of thoughts, and the big ones were, and your thought on after 2 years, the advice for people that are sober is just keep being sober. I think that the groundwork for why we want to stay sober that's laid in those first couple of months, you know, finding, you know, reasons to be sober, finding all the reasons why being on whatever substance that we're on doesn't do anything to help whatever situations that they might be patching over or allowing you to ignore. I think all that groundwork, I think that that's all still there. So the keep being sober for all of that groundwork is kind of the implication of that. I have a question for you. Is what would you want to be able to say to yourself about how you feel about alcohol now? Like, do you want to be able to drink in moderation? Do you want to, are you comfortable and happy not drinking at all ever again? What would you like to see for yourself down the road with this thinking?
As far as alcohol in my life?
Yeah.
Is I really, I see it for what it is. Like when I finally realized I'm spending my time farting around with drinking and not drinking and being drunk and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody loves a bottom story. Here's mine. Here's what broke the camel's back.
Mm-hmm.
Just bought a brand new house, moved in, first month there. I don't remember when, fell down the stairs into the basement, dead drunk, all the way down the stairs.
That's a bottom story.
No. Next month, sometime, don't remember when, dead drunk, fell down the stairs again, all the way to the bottom.
The noise.
So the next month, month number three, third time, all the way to the bottom of the stairs, I'm laying on the ground, and I'm like, so this is you, huh? This is you. You're just going to keep falling down the fucking stairs. So that was like obviously something's wrong.
Right.
And this was after, I mean, I have, there are legends about my nonsense and my ridiculous behavior. So, so much shame. Just like how much of my life did I waste pouring my efforts into not facing what was really the problem? And so I just say, see alcohol as in all you did was enable my procrastination, basically. And I kind of feel like if you. All right. This is a great direction to go. Have you heard of ACEs? ACEES.
No.
Adult Adverse Child Environmental Situations, I think it is.
Okay.
Anyways, it's a score. It's 10 questions. And depending on how many questions you answer yes to is your ACEs score.
Okay.
And so if you have a score higher than a 3, I think, a 3 or a 4, you have, I don't remember the number, but there's an exponential growth in the chance for alcoholism and substance abuse.
Okay.
And the higher you go on that ACEs score, it starts taking years off your life.
Uh-huh.
Like your life expectancy goes down, all sorts of problems. So it just seems, again, all roads keep leading back to trauma fueling almost all of these addicts. Like, I really think the difference between somebody who becomes an addict and somebody who doesn't is, I don't think it's so much genetic as it is environmental. Some of the research I've seen, you know, the genetic aspect of it is marginal at best, but the environmental stuff, I mean, growing up as a kid, I didn't know a sober person.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was drunk.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was the 70s, and it was a much different time. And I know my mother used alcohol. Her mother used alcohol. I come from a long line of Irish Catholics, and drinking is a full contact sport for us.
Sure.
So I didn't know any better, I guess. And I'm really happy to see at least a lot more care being taken with the kids these days. Like, if I don't know, from what I've heard from some of the podcasts I listen to and the research I've done,
mm-hmm.
it seems that there's a tighter eye being turned towards stopping a lot of this at the ground level.
Pretty early on, yeah.
Before, yeah.
No, like my oldest knows that I'm an alcoholic at the age of, you know, he's 13, so he knows and has known for the past 4 months, 3 months, 3 months that I'm an alcoholic. And my youngest will be the same way. I want them to have a clear picture of it. I don't know that I don't know what the numbers on what the genetic connection to addiction are. I definitely think that they're there, though. I think that they do exist. Now, do they play a greater or lesser extent than environment or previous trauma? That I wouldn't be able to, you know, throw a number at. You know, if it's 35% genetic and 65% environmental, then that's still a whole lot of work that can be done environmentally before somebody, you know, succumbs to addiction. The reason that I asked the question about, you know, what lens do you want to view alcohol through moving forward is because when I think of drinking, I think of two things. One, I would like to do it still to this day. Like right now, I would still like to have a drink. It would be great if I could have a beer. It would be wonderful to drink whiskey. I always enjoyed that sensation. I have a very fear-based mechanism of coping with that, though. And that is, regardless of the fact that I'm, you know, 2 years and 7.5 months sober, and I've been, you know, really good this entire time, the amount of things that I've done between the time that I got sober and today that are self-improvement or moving myself in directions that I want to go, there's no comparison to pre-sober Will. Everything that I'm doing now is in a much more positive direction. I'm doing things for better reasons. I'm in the best shape that I've ever been. Like I have so many good things moving forward that I stand to lose because of the way that I know I am when I overindulge on a regular basis on alcohol. That the idea of even one time, the thought of losing my wife, who is my best friend and who I love with all my heart, the thought of losing access to my children, the thought that I was suicidal towards the end of my active portion of alcoholism, like all of these things are, they're fear-based and I recognize them, but I think that that's a healthy fear to potentially go back to that. So every single time I'm confronted with a, would it be worth it to go back to drinking? Like, is it really, would it have really been worth it to go to the Avalanche parade, take a hit from, you know, a stoner that was there and then slug a beer? I don't see how that could ever be something that's going to be worthwhile if it means even a minuscule percentage chance of me losing what I've gained in the last two and a half years. There's just no way.
No doubt.
Yeah. So, you know, when you asked me that question, you framed it in terms of the self-medicating being disconnected from the idea of addiction. And because I have the overarching thought that every single person that suffers from substance abuse in a different way that has common threads all throughout it, I'm not going to like prescribe for you that, you know, the way that I do things is the right way for you to do them too.
Yeah.
That was why I wanted to ask the question was, what do you want your relationship with alcohol to be? Do you want to get back to it? Because if I said this kind of thing to myself, my immediate thought would be, he's just trying to figure out, his inner addict is just trying to figure out a way to get back to the bottle.
Yeah. No, alcohol has ruined my life. But it certainly was not helping. So I definitely, my relationship with it is finished.
Okay.
I'm not interested in ever being drunk again. Physiologically, a lot of the brain chemistry and the science behind it, alcohol is really difficult to get out of your system. And once it gets in there, you know, that's it definitely has a grip on you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not afraid of it. I don't crave it. I'm not scared of it. Like, it can be around me.
Mm-hmm.
If people get drunk and start acting like idiots, I generally just leave. I do find them irritating.
Sure. But, sure.
I'll still take their money and sell them a t-shirt.
Moo-hoo-ha.
But yeah, as far as like, I am not, I don't see any benefit to alcohol. Like you were saying the other day, when we had to boil it, you know, to get the pathogens out.
Right, right.
And stuff like that. Yeah, I get that. But we don't have to do this anymore.
No.
And so I just, nobody's ever told me a great story about an alcoholic. funny, amusing, but always a warning.
Yeah. There's always that sort of, And then later on, he had to take the butt plug out, and that wasn't so much fun. Yeah. Like, that's always exactly. Like the end of all those stories, right? So I don't know. I feel like now we're kind of on the aesthetic question of, because you ended the question with, you know, does this change the way I engage with calling myself an addict, was kind of the feeling that I got. And I don't know how to answer that portion of the question. For me, I know I'm an addict, and telling myself and telling other people that I'm an addict feels really, really, really important. Like, it feels like
it's very empowering.
Yeah, it is like I'm owning this portion of myself that I do not like. I will draw strength from the ownership of that, even though the actual, like, being an addict is not something to, like, be proud of. But owning it is an entirely different, because that's me taking responsibility for it.
Mm-hmm.
If you are able to do all of those things, be around alcohol, be around drunk people, be around drinking culture, without A, relapsing, or B, feeling like you want to or need to, I don't know that it necessarily matters that you call yourself an addict. I don't know that it does. At that point, it might be an aesthetic choice. I would always take that aesthetic choice because I think that, like I said, it's important to me. But at the end of the day, if you're not making those mistakes that you were making while you were abusing substances, I think that that's what counts. I think that that saying I'm an addict can be a part of that, but I don't know 100% that every single person that has abused substances and even done it in a, you know, kind of a chronic manner, I don't know that that needs to be a part of their sobriety. If you're going to be sober, and you're going to do that in a very kind of natural way where it just sort of, you just are. I mean, I know people that are sober that they just don't like alcohol. They just don't like it. They never did.
Yeah.
I don't call them addicts. I don't call them that. I don't call them sober. They just don't like alcohol. So I don't know. I don't know. Steve, it's been me and Bo talking. What do you think about all of this?
You guys, I mean, you kind of hit it, right? Like, in the end, you don't know, right? Is it aesthetic? Does it matter? Yeah, man, I don't know either.
Like, gotcha.
I don't know that I have a good answer for any of this. I know that's not what you were looking for, but yeah, it's...
No, that's
it
fine.
It certainly feels like it's... It certainly feels like, from the outside anyways, that it is somewhat important that label does seem important in the sense of, like, keeping you accountable, right?
Right.
But in the end, yeah, if you don't really need it, then I guess more power to you.
Well, do we consider the ownership of your alcoholism just another tool in your toolbox of keeping yourself sober in a state of sobriety?
Yeah, exactly. I would think so. The answer is yes, but again, I don't know. As someone who does not have that particular problem, I'm not sure that I can answer that.
Well, I mean, you're absolutely correct. It just might be semantics at this point. Just how far down are we drilling?
Yeah. So, yeah.
But again, I'm up to my neck in a lot of therapy, so I'm digging it in a lot deeper than I need to be at times.
But you know, kind of almost speaking to what Will said there, you know, as far as the tools that he uses, is this just your set of tools?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
is
yeah.
what it comes across to me as is like this for you. Focusing on the root of the problem, the hurt, is what keeps you from going, you know, going down those roads. And you know, vice versa for Will, it sounds like, you know, for him, it's the focusing on those consequences that keeps him from going down those roads. And so if those are the tools that any, you know, anyone needs then to stay sober, which, you know, which is kind of the point of this whole thing that we're doing here.
Yeah.
Then yeah, I mean, how many times have we, you know, said we don't necessarily agree with the specific 12 steps or AA, but if that's what works for you, then you use that tool.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that just sounds like, honestly, what we're talking about here is just, these are different tools, different mechanisms. And yeah, if figuring out that the root of the problem was the problem, then, what works, then yeah, go with that.
Yeah. And the more tools you have, the more situations, I guess, you're prepared for.
Absolutely.
And I guess for me, knowing where my weaknesses are and having a laundry list of tools to like access, I don't know. It feels like for me this chapter is closed and another one's open. Like this is the second half of the big game.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that happened in the first half was, well, I'm not going to lie, it looked bad. But we'll see what happens.
They had
in
us
the
in the first
half.
Well,
exactly.
Like you gotta imagine though, that like if the game and the tools are mismatched, like you show up to a football game in hockey gear and you don't know the rules to the football stuff, you have to learn those rules. And that's kind of how I feel a little bit, you know, moving through sobriety is, well, I was tuned for one sport and now I'm having to learn another sport. And every single thing that I do in the second sport is moving me down the path of my life. Yes, sports analogizing, I'm good with it. Is moving me down, you know, the path to the goal line you know, a happier, healthier, better engaged life. You know, and it took trying to force, you know, going five hole on a goalie that didn't exist before I decided that, you know, I was going to run the play that the quarterback told me to. How fucking muddled was that?
Yeah, that was... I followed it.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
You might have went across the goal line there in your skates, but
yeah. I was in the crease. All right. Well, do you have anything else that you'd like to share tonight, Bo?
No. I just hope I didn't screw up your podcast.
No, man. This was great. We had a good solid, you know, hour plus of content. I'm pretty freaking pleased right now, man. But yeah, we're getting on to about the 8:30 hour, which means that as usual, on the Save Versus Poison podcast, we'd like to shout out to the mutual support groups that we hope you turn to in your time of need. Alcoholics Anonymous, AA.org, 212-870-3400. Moderation Management, www.moderation.org. 212-871-0974. Secular AA, www.sossobriety.org, 323-693-1633. Smart Recovery, smartrecovery.org, 440-951-5357. Women for Sobriety, womenforsobriety.org, 215-536-8026. And for friends and family that are needing a little assistance in a group type setting, there's Al-Anon Family Groups. They can be reached at www.al-anon.alateen.org or 1-888-425-2666. The show will be up on YouTube. We'll have our normal Wednesday night Twitch stream. We're doing Wild West Wednesdays in Red Dead Redemption Online 2. We're going to have a good time playing that the night that this comes out. The YouTube episode should be out by Friday, no later than Friday. And Bo, can't thank you enough for joining us tonight. Seriously, this was great.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Anytime. Steve?
Yes, sir.
Go fuck yourself.
Okay.
In your sweet, sexy pool.
That seems like a
your
thing.
Your water wings in the pool.
With what's left of your beard.
With what's left of your beard.
Exactly.
No, I love you, Steve. From all of us here at the Save Versus Poison podcast, I'm Will.
I'm Bo.
I'm Steve.
And we wish you warm, creamy regards. Thanks so much. Good night, everybody. You've just listened to another episode of the Save Versus Poison podcast. If you liked what you heard, please follow us, like, and subscribe on Twitter at @VS_save, on Facebook at the Save Versus Poison Podcast, and streaming live on Twitch at twitch.tv/SVP Podcast. Thanks so much for joining us, and stay safe, everyone.